Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
What's going on, guys? Welcome back to the No Bad Dogs podcast. This is an excellent conversation with a dog owner. This is a new one for you guys. This is a small, older dog, which we don't get too much of. So I hope that this is important and helpful to the people out there that are dealing with these things, either dog trainers or dogs. Small or older dog, very nice person adopted this dog that has been through hell. Small Yorkie, senior dog, dealing with some separation, etc. So before we get into this podcast, do me a solid favor, guys. I do this absolutely for free, highly produced every single week with all the expensive equipment for you guys. Leave us a review. It would mean the world to us. If not, keep listening for free. That's okay too, but it would mean a lot to me, sincerely, if you did. We have a little over 1,000 reviews right now, and it'd be great if we just keep climbing. First question. Oh, wait, no. That's at the end of the podcast. At the end of the podcast, I answer your dog training questions as well. So in the iTunes review chart, you can leave your review and in a question in that review. Let's get into the podcast. Hope you guys enjoy it. I'm going to talk to you at the end. So what's up?
Well, yeah. No, the reason I wanted to connect with you, so I just recently found you a couple weeks ago, and I'm so excited to be able to speak to you about this. So little backstory on me. I had a Yorkie for 15 years. She crossed the Rainbow Bridge in August of last year. I was not ready for a puppy. I felt like I'd be cheating on her. So I went ahead and adopted a senior Yorkie. She's blind, which I think might actually be reversible. I just got her this past weekend. And so the impetus for wanting to speak to you was I was nervous. I've never had a rescue, for one. I've always had dogs from puppies. And then, you know, I was fortunate enough, we've always had small dogs, that their temperament and their disposition was sweet. So we did like minimal training. And then, so that really was not a part of our family kind of life. They were potty trained, they knew how to sit for snackies, and that was about the extent of their education. So with this one, I think I was more nervous initially about how scared and confused she would be. I kind of took some notes for this call. So it's kind of evolved. So she bonded to me very quickly. It turns out she was surrendered. I really don't know the backstory. I just know in the last 3 weeks, she had all of her teeth removed. She was spayed and she had a tumor removed. So she's been through a lot. So when she came to me, you know, she loved having somebody to lay on the couch with, and she seemed pretty potty trained. She was, you know, she pulls on the leash a little bit, which we'll have to work through. And that was another question I had for you, because initially they had her on a martingale collar, but she's, you know, she's tiny, and probably way better than I do if those are safe. I ended up taking it off. I had to cut it. Is that normal? Like there was no clasp. Do they not have clasps?
Yeah, sometimes they don't have clasps. No, martingales typically don't. And sometimes if you let it, like Burley did that, for an example. I had to cut a martingale off him because he grew so fast that I forgot to. Uh-huh. So sometimes if you can't pull it over their head, you have to cut it. But typically, when you get a martingale, you're supposed to be able to pull it over the dog's head. But sometimes if people forget, or in your dog's case, it could be like a neglect thing where they just didn't care, you know.
Right. So I have her on a harness just because she's so small. And I mean, I would love your thoughts kind of on using a collar because she is pulling on the leash. But I think my biggest concern, I have two big concerns. I want her to get confidence. I bought a mat where she can do nose play and find treats and stuff like that. Cool. We were going on walks, which was great, but I just found out today that she tested positive for Coccidia, which I guess is an intestinal parasite. I just got her on Saturday, took her to the vet yesterday. And wow. So now we're having to deal with that. So it's the confidence thing. And then I left her for about 15 to 30 minutes a couple times yesterday because I just wanted to see how she would do. So I work full time. I'm an investment banker in New York City. So you can imagine I'm away from home for most of the day. And I want to just kind of see how she was. She lost her shit, to be honest. So she jumped the fence, which I was not expecting, and got out. So
when you say fence, did you have her like in your apartment in a small fenced in area? Mm-hmm. Okay. Like an X-Pen type thing?
Yes.
Gotcha.
Because the idea being that because I'm gone all day, I want her to have access to her pee-pee pads,
sure,
and her food and her water. I didn't want to crate her all day. But I want her, that's another thing too. We have to work on crates. She's afraid of crates. So if I throw snacks in there and stuff, she'll go in, but she doesn't like to stay in there. It's not a safe space for her yet. So she jumped the fence and I thought, okay, well, I have to go to work tomorrow. So I ended up putting her in the bathroom. She's blind, so I didn't feel as guilty by not giving her access to windows and stuff, which I still would love for her to be able to have some natural sunlight because I know she can see movements and things like that. But she was thrown a fit for about 2 hours. And I think the reason I did that is at least I knew she'd be safe until I could figure out what to do, because that was my main concern. So that's kind of where we're at. So the confidence and the separation anxiety, I think if we're triaging, those are the two most important things for me right now and like what I can do. You know, like I said, I've watched a lot of your videos. You know, when it comes to like, you know, getting her to focus on me, she's okay with it, but it's a lot of the things I hear involve, you know, having them look and see. And so just knowing that she's blind, she doesn't really have those capabilities, just kind of getting some guidance from you on the best way to proceed for those two things specifically. And then maybe we can talk about some other stuff.
Sure. Yeah, that's great. So I think the biggest thing to tackle would be the separation. So because we don't know background history, we don't know the extent of, you know, definite neglect, but possible abuse, you know, or however you know, whatever. So I guess my point is the fact that she's not giving you the hardest time ever about the crate, like the fact that she'll go in for food is good. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes dogs who are, you know, been crated their whole life, they'll just never step foot in a crate. And you're just going to have to, like, I always tell people like, hey, this is an older dog. You know, how much time do you want to spend on trying to get your dog to work against trauma that they've had their entire lives, you know? So the fact that she'll go in for food is great. I will say that crate training for dogs outside of the puppy stages, the only thing that you're dealing against is time, because it's more of an association thing. It's more of a conditioning thing. So if they've been conditioned their whole life to say, this thing sucks, I hate it, then obviously you're going to have to backtrack and say, actually, this is a good place and let me show you why. So we're taking food inside the crate. We're going, so that's good. That's, I mean, and I'm just giving you perspective of other dogs that I've worked with in the past that they quite literally, will never even go near it. They put on the brakes. They lose their bowels. It's impossible. It's like, okay, let's risk over reward here. So, so I'll just say that, you know, in the beginning is, that is definitely something that will take time, but desensitization, obviously Saturday. So it's been less than a week, right? So it's like, okay, this is brand new. So time is on your side, which is good. It's not like you're like, hey, I've had this dog for 6 months and we can't get any ground. So I think the best thing to do is, I would agree. I think, the X-Pen's great. Obviously it's like, why do we crate our dogs? There's so many reasons why we crate our dogs. Some of the main reasons are like, you know, like with my puppy Burley, it's like, if I let him out, he's going to get into everything. He's going to, in the beginning, he might poop and pee. He's going to get into the couch. He's going to get in the shoes. He's going to get in the sandals. He's going to whatever. Right. Alternatively, if I put him in the crate, he's going to spin his big butt around once, lay down and literally snore the whole house off until somebody lets him back out. So it's like, okay, that's an easy decision. So with your dog, I understand it's like, okay, let's do the X-Pen because that makes more sense. But now we're jumping over the X-Pen, which makes it more dangerous for the dog because they can get into other things. So the crate makes the most sense sustainably until we can possibly desensitize or figure out another solution. So you're back at work now, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. What's your hours typically that you leave?
I usually leave around 8:30 and then I get back home around 6:30.
Okay. So that just gives me like a timeline. So
yeah,
there's a couple things. Like obviously with an older dog, we don't need to go on a 5K every day, right? Mm-hmm. But and I have so many clients in New York City, and I go to New York City frequently, so I kind of understand the lifestyle a little bit. But I understand, you know, the up and downs and the hallways and all that stuff. It's like, okay, it's a lot. So pee pads are great, especially for a small dog, because it's like, hey, this, again, pleasure over pain. It's like, hey, like if I just pee pad this dog, it's going to be better. But because mm-hmm. we don't have the ability to say, hey, here's a flirt pole, or hey, here, let's do some training stuff, like because the dog's blind, we can't really like exert some of that physical energy. But if we go for walks, we can. And mm-hmm. so I would just say, the first thing I would say is mental exhaustion is like, when I say exhaustion, mental stimulation is the first thing. So getting mm-hmm. some of that out. Older dogs will keep that tank lower longer. So a puppy is going to bounce right back with resilience pretty much in the first 30 minutes, depending on the breed. So again, you're going in at 8, you wake up, you get ready, do all that stuff. So just think about time management there of like, hey, can I get mm-hmm. this dog out, you know, pick the dog up, go downstairs, and go out for a long walk, depending on where you live, you know, like try to get that energy out, that get, you know, get things moving, right? That's really helpful. Mm-hmm. It's not the answer, but it's definitely helpful if we get, and it depends on your time. And I understand people have lives, we have shit to do. I get it, but spend mm-hmm. as much time as you can with that. That's the first thing. And then the crate desensitization would be quite literally like, how food motivated are we? Are we like, well, we kind of like food, or we love food?
So we're learning. One of my goals is to put some weight on her, and I don't know if she's not eating a lot because she just had all of her teeth pulled. And so maybe she was sore before that all happened. And now she's adjusting. Funny enough, she still prefers kibble over soft food, which I thought was interesting. But you know, today I left food and water in the bathroom with her, and I've been kind of checking in on her throughout the day. And she was going to town on the hard kibble. So that made me happy. But I also know she's now dealing with a parasite, which could also be why she's not eating that much.
Right.
So I
have
a bunch of things. So, but she does like snackies. Like when I put Bill Jacks in front of her, like she loses her mind.
Cool. Perfect.
So, yeah.
So whatever food that she likes and she loves and she goes crazy for, we will, and again, because you can't really, it's tough to cure, meaning like you can't say crate and she's like, oh, I know where that is because I can see it and I can go in there. And I'm like, well, like what I would do is put her into the crate, and you know that she's not deaf.
Correct.
Okay. So you could start cueing this, meaning just have a name for what the crate is. And we typically are just use English like crate. Okay. So what you could do is, what I would do is get that food out. You can put it in your hand, you could put it in a bowl, and she's like excited for it. And you'd have her like the crate's here, and then you'd have her out here, and you'd say crate. And then you just pull the food in. She'd go over the, you know, the, whatever crate you have, and she'd go in there and she'd eat. And you keep her on a leash. You say, okay, break. And you bring her out, and you would just get the idea of going into the crate over and over again. And what you would do is what a lot of people make the mistake of is they will use, like, especially for a smaller dog, they will use like a full meal. And I'm like, well, if you use a full meal, you can only do it once. So what I tell people is like, if you're feeding raw, or if you're feeding, or if you're working with treats, or whatever you're working with, just give small little pieces and just do it over and over and over again. And that's what you should be doing right now to desensitize getting into the crate. So it would be crate. And then you get her in there and you'd pet her and you'd say, yay. And then she'd be on a leash. Once she finishes the food, you'd pop her out. And you just keep working on her going into the crate voluntarily, following the food. And excuse me, that's where a lot of dogs like have a hard time in the beginning, is just the intro to getting in there by themselves. So, and then the second thing is duration. So when she gets in there, what I typically do, depending on the dog, is the dog gets into the crate, and then if they're eating something and then it's gone, especially for a blind dog, they're like, what's next? And they're going to use their nose. So really, blind dogs, honestly, like, dogs are unbelievable animals, and they're so resilient, and their instincts are so incredible that they know what's going on. Like, they know full well what's going on. Like, yeah, it's a disadvantage, sure, right? But dogs are animals, and they're very like, okay, good, I don't have this anymore, but I can smell, so I know exactly where the food is anyway. So my point is you know, so I typically would just keep putting food in there, working on the duration. So pop the food in there and she's searching for it. The more she searches, the better. Because every time she's searching for it, you're building that duration. If you put it right to her face and you feed her out of your hand, you're minimalizing the duration. If you if she can hear the food clink hit the crate, she's like, ooh, and she's searching. That's what I would do. Try to have an audible of like, you're reloading. That way she's looking and searching. And because she's blind, it kind of could be a, you know, an advantage for you because she doesn't know when you're gone. So yeah. Those are the things I would be doing is just building that duration out, throwing the food in there. And she's just getting comfortable in there. And really what you're looking for is that little pocket, that little secret of her standing in the crate expecting food. Because that, mm-hmm. that means she's like, I'm accepting this. I'm comfortable in here. This feels good. Pay me more. And then you can get to a point, you can get creative talking out loud, is you can get those like treat dispensers where if you work on this duration and you do this treat dispensing thing, she just sits there in the crate and she's like, I don't care where I'm at. And if you have a dog like her where she's small and she's eating kibble, you can load her whole breakfast up and put it out in a duration over like an hour and a half. And then the first hour and a half when you're gone is like, tink, and she hears it, and she's searching for it, and she's smelling, she's sniffing, she's sitting there waiting, tink, and she just, you could do that, and that's just an idea, it's one of the ideas, and any dog that I work with, any owner that I work with is all, as you probably know, and watch me, but now, like, I'm improv, I'm just talking out loud, that's what I would start to be doing, but her going in on her own, meaning you're going to use a leash, you're going to use food, but you're not forcing her in. That's okay. Step one. Step two is going to be building that duration. Step three is going to be building the randomized treat dispensing in the crate so she hears it and she's searching. That way she'll stay in there because she's like, this is where I get paid. If you feed her kibble, I would be paying her that way in the crate every meal. And the more you do it, the better she's going to get. Then what I would do if you have the opportunity, means, and comfortability is I would hire a dog walker to come in midday to bring her for another walk. That's going to be huge for her because she's going to get fresh air. She's going to be mentally and physically stimulated. She's going to be smelling things. She's going to be hearing things. All that stuff is going to be great for stimulation as it is for humans as well. You know, we sit in a desk in a room all day and we're not stimulated really at all, especially if you do it for even 2 weeks at a time. So getting her out is huge. That would be so impactful for her. If you have somebody, New York City is great because you pretty much have everything and anything at your fingertips as long as you're willing to pay for it. So that's cool. So the other thing you can do is if you get a really good sitter or, you know, you can even find people on Rover that are whatever. But you can even say, hey, could you spend... Can I just show you this exercise that you can, and some people are like, and as you know, like some people are like, oh my God, yes, I'd love to. And then other people are like, well, I really don't only do the let outs. And it's like, okay. So if you can find somebody that's like willing and able, you can do two things. You can say, can you just throw food in? She's like, you say crate, she's going to go in her crate and you just every 5 seconds throw food in the ground. She gets it, you know, or you can say, hey, can you reload the treat dispenser for her before you leave? Whatever. And then obviously when you come home, I mean, personally, again, depending on your means and what you can do, if you're gone from 8 to 6, somebody comes over at 1 to 2, you could also have somebody maybe come back again if you wanted to. It just depends on what you want to do. She's going to be fine because she's an older dog and you don't have to worry about that. And she's pee pad trained. You don't have to really worry about that. But if you're worried about that anxiety, having somebody over to relieve that would only help, but totally get it if it's something that you can't do. So then when you get home, it would be the same thing, like getting her outside. Because I know, again, as an older dog, she doesn't need, and she pees and poops inside and stuff. So it's not like she needs to go out to go potty, but that mental and physical stimulation is oftentimes overlooked for dogs who are pee pad trained because they're not able to be dogs. They're just kind of stuck up inside and they're like bored. And again, it's like some people are like, well, the dog can't see. It's like, well, they can smell and they can hear and they can feel, mm-hmm. right? And all those things are different, right? Walking on different materials and walking in sand versus cement. And, you know, New York City is just a melting pot of environmentals for dogs. It's actually an incredible place to train a dog because they're bomb proof, right? So that's step one. Does that make sense?
So question, yeah, no, that's perfect. And no, it tracks. When I took her out last night, we walked for about 90 minutes. I mean, she's
great.
Just like the Energizer bunny. I mean,
yeah.
Just the smells and everything.
Great.
And I looked at doing a dog walker. I guess my concern was, how soon do you introduce somebody new into our little environment? I mean, is it sooner?
Well,
that's kind of the main focus of this call. It's like, I want to get her started off on the right foot, right? I don't want to do anything bad off the bat. So would love your thoughts there.
Yeah. If it were my dog, I would be like, here's what I'm thinking is like, do I want to wait for her to get fully comfortable? That's one side. Or the alternative is, if I do want to wait because I want her to get more comfortable with me and her lifestyle, the downside or the cons are she's not getting out throughout the day. And to me, that's not worth it. So there's that, especially if she likes walks. Like if she's out and she's like, hell yeah, this is great because I lived in a small closet my whole life and nobody fed me and I have to get all my teeth removed and I also have a tumor and I also have a parasite and I whatever, and I'm blind, whatever. It's like, if she's like, can somebody please let me outside so I can be an animal, and that person is that person, then I would totally do that.
Okay.
Yeah. But so to give you context, if you had a dog that was like, I'm afraid of new people, I'm biting people, I'm growling at people, I don't want to go outside, it's like, okay, maybe take your time, because the dog being inside by themselves, they're actually more comfortable than somebody coming in and freaking them out. This doesn't sound like the case. It's more like somebody coming in and getting her out. She's like, yay, I get to go do that outside thing that I've never been able to do in this big, beautiful city. Great. That's more beneficial than alternative.
Okay. That's helpful. Thank you.
You're welcome. And it's a great, totally, totally reasonable way to think, because you don't want to overwhelm and you don't want to do too much at once. But like you said, kind of, you know, answering your own question, you're like, I want to create a good routine. And it's like, well, now's the time. Get it going.
Okay, great. And so this will all kind of indirectly help with that separation anxiety.
Yeah, so yes, all of those things will help. Again, like the separation anxiety thing is more of a time thing. And to be honest, separation, like, okay, so defining that. So true separation anxiety, clinically for like a behaviorist would say that in my experience, there's a spectrum of separation anxiety. And I think dog owners will use separation anxiety very freely because it's subjective to them. And that's what they think. They don't know what else to call it, so they say separation anxiety. But like to some, like again, like when people say, I was an animal control officer at one point in my career. I saw some really nasty shit that I can't erase out of my mind that people did with dogs. That was my job, is to basically go to court and fight for them. So whenever somebody says correcting your dog is abusive, it pisses me off, because I'm like, you don't know what abuse is. So shut up. Right. But so my point by saying that is separation anxiety, it has a spectrum, right? So sometimes separation anxiety is so bad that a dog is peeing and pooping on themselves, hurting themselves, causing self-harm to try to get out, to get to you, because they feel like they're going to have a heart attack and die. That's separation anxiety. But also separation anxiety for generally most people is the dog would rather be with you and not in the crate, and they may whine and spin and at the crate, but they're not killing themselves literally to get out. They're not defecating on themselves because they feel like they're going to die any second. So there's a spectrum of same things, like I'm in pain. It's like, you know, you go to the doctor and they're like 1 through 10. So anyway, so to answer your question, separation anxiety comes in many different flavors and many different spectrums. And I would say right now, if she's just like, I don't want to be alone, that's reasonable. You and I can understand, like, I get it. Especially like, and that's the thing with you right now, is you got to be careful a little bit, because when you go from such a contrasting environment, sometimes it can be damp. It's like putting a hot pan in cold water. Like, you got to be really careful how you do it, because you can create this unhealthy balance really quickly. Mm-hmm. So some of the, not to scare you or anything, and this really isn't applicable to you considering the age and the breed and the size of your dog, but some of the most challenging behavioral cases with reactivity and aggression has been that where a dog was abandoned, neglected, or abused for the beginning of their life, and then they were adopted or rescued or however you want to call it, and then they got the exact opposite. They got no structure. They got all freedom, love, and attention, because it's an emotional thing for dog owners. That's what they want to do. They're like, this dog has been locked in a crate forever. No crates, no leashes. I'm never going to tell the dog no. And then all of a sudden they come to the dog with me and the dog is a psycho. And I'm like, well, now you've created this, you know, now you've kind of made things worse, actually. You probably, they probably would have been better off where they were, right? And I know that it's kind of hard to comprehend, but from my standpoint of what I see, it's kind of what happens. So my point is separation anxiety right now is she's always going to want to be with you because you are so much better than anything else she's ever experienced, which is amazing. And that's the point. That's good. But you, from a dog owner standpoint, should be very, you should have your boundaries set pretty clear and be consistent with it, right? So you just have to be careful about how much you enable that anxiety and that fear, right? Because if she's like, oh my God, I'm freaking out. What do we do? And you're like, don't worry, I'll save you. And you're, you know, sitting down watching Desperate Housewives. It's like, wait a minute, you know, and you know, it's like, wait a minute, we're okay. We're good, actually. You can stay down there. So my point is just from food for thought, by seeing so many cases like this, there are times where, like, I would be working on actually controlled separation just to, and again, I'm a dog lover myself. I know the benefits and the temptation and how hard it is not to cuddle and get dogs in your lap, and especially small dogs. I totally understand all those things, and I'm not telling you you can't. All I'm saying is there might be exercises throughout the day, throughout the week, that you might want to start practicing controlled separation, which is simply putting the dog on the leash, putting them at the foot of your couch or your bed or whatever you're sitting on, to start healthily saying, like, hey, I'm right here, you're right here, and this is okay. But the moment you start saying you are going to, anytime you want to get up with me and you're connected with me, and again, I understand, but from a professional, like, there's the dog owner of me, but then there's like, okay, oh, this is all the shit I've seen that creates this bad stuff. But from what I've seen is it creates this unrealistic, unhealthy relationship for the dog, because the dog has no idea that that's not your, what do you mean? Sitting at home and watching Netflix isn't your job? It's like, no, I got to leave, right? I got stuff to do. I got to go to work.
Your vet bill from yesterday.
Exactly. So it's like, you know, so just consider those things and be mindful of those things moving forward to help with separation anxiety outside of the crate stuff, because that's inevitable. Like, you're going to have to, either it's the crate or it's the X-Pen or it's the bathroom. Regardless, you are going to have to leave, period. Doesn't matter how you shape that up, right? But when you start talking about separation anxiety and how to decrease it, it's difficult. But what I typically do, like Burley did this heavily in the beginning. He wanted to get into my bed. And I knew the moment I let him do that, it would be all over, because he's like, he kind of felt that and he's like, this is what I want. And I knew I didn't want a 200-pound dog in my bed, because then I would lose sleep, and then who's going to pay for the bills, because I can't work, and I, you know, it goes down. So my point is put her on leash, keep her, you know, on the floor, and she's going to like hop and do all this cute shit and cry and whine. But if you just teach her how to just be calm and self-soothe, it creates a mechanism in herself to say, okay, fine. But if we, oh, and this is something I see with small dog owners all the time. And part of me is like, I know it's cute, but the other part of me is like, holy shit, you're ruining your dog. So just be careful and mindful of that, because if they feel an ounce of insecurity, or if they're around you in most cases, and they're like, hey, I'd rather be picked up, when you have that relationship where they would just, like, anytime they, like, imagine the life that we lived if we're like, oh, I got to pay this bill, or, oh, I got to go to work, and we just hit a button and it just released, like dopamine in us, and it just, like, you know, went away like a drug. Like, that's basically what they do, is they go, hey, I'm nervous, and you go, whoosh. No, you're not. And they unfortunately don't have the ability within themselves to handle life. And the moment you say, you walk them through this, in a way that they don't like it, of course, but that they will understand it in the long run is really healthy for them. So those are things that you can do with the dog to help with confidence. And that's, like, defining confidence would be the dog's ability to create self-worth and dependence without being codependent on you. Right. And that's what that would be. So she's going to go, oh, I need to get up there. And it's like, and again, selfishly for us humans, we're like, oh, I want to cuddle you because that makes me feel good. It's a long day's work. Everything's great. And that's true. And that's valid. However, if your dog doesn't have the ability, like, if you put your dog down and they're like, oh, I can't live, then there's a problem. It's like, okay. Like, again, like, my dog Burley, he tries to get up on the couch and I'm like, get off. And he's like, okay. And he gets off, but he can't not survive off the couch. He just wants to get on the couch because he's a puppy and he's just being mischievous and that's what he does. But when you have a dog that's like, I need to be next to you to survive, that's when you need to start having controlled, active, like, you're down here, I'm up here, and I'm doing this for your own good. Like parenting. It's like, why wouldn't you let me stay up past 12? I'm like, because you're 8 years old. Like, bedtime's 8. Like, go to bed, you know? There's things that they want to do, and there's things that you have to do as an adult, that a responsible adult that says, I have to start, you know, safeguarding your own self. So those are exercises that you can start doing. And again, doesn't have to be all night, doesn't have to be every day, just small durations. You get on the couch, you get on, even in your desk.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Desk here, and she's like, I want to get up, and you just say nope, and you put a leash on her, and basically she jumps up and you just kind of pull her off, nope, and then then what will happen, I can guarantee you, I don't guarantee a lot of things in dog training, but I can 99% chance guarantee that at some point she's going to take a deep breath and go, and she's going to curl up and she's going to lay down on her own, and you're going to go bingo, and that's it. So she's learning how to self-soothe. Mm-hmm. But remember, the more you, like, allow her and enable her to Velcro on you, because you're just doing it because you feel bad and you love her and all that cute stuff, and that's real, and I have empathy for that. But the problem is when you leave and you go to work and you're doing all this stuff, she's at home going, oh. So yeah. Just on the anxiety thing, that's also what I would recommend too.
No, that's helpful, and it's funny because before I got her and I was listening to you, I knew I humanized my dog's way, you know, but I knew her specifically. And after listening to you, that I didn't realize that doing it the way that you describe is actually almost loving, you know, showing better for them than right. the way that we do it. And I think that was having that kind of click was helpful for me. Because I'm the worst. I'm so guilty of it. And I did notice that immediately when she always had to be next to me the first night. I tried to put her in her crate to go to bed, put it on the ground. She lost her mind. So then I went ahead and put the crate on the bed just so I could put my hand in to try to soothe her. It was 6 hours just crying.
Yeah.
And so I capitulated and I just put her in bed and she's fine. So yeah, I'm just trying to get to a point where she doesn't, you know, Sunday she was a little bit better. Whereas if I got up from the couch, she didn't feel the need to constantly like listen for me. She could actually go back to sleep. So I was like, okay. And I know some of this might be just time too. I mean, it's only been a couple of days. So maybe once she realizes, oh, she always comes home, maybe it'll get better too. And maybe that's part of it. Or maybe I'm giving her way too much credit. But yeah, that's my fear. I love that she wants to be next to me, but I want her to be an independent woman.
Yeah. So. Yeah, exactly. And I get it. And I'm glad that you've kind of had that realization, because that's the thing is like, if people actually went down, like if I told some random person that was holding their dog that was like shaking in their arms, I'm like, you picking your dog up is actually making things a lot worse. And it's more unethical for you to do that than having your dog be confident dog and be an animal. They would obviously think I'm an absolute lunatic and call me crazy. Yeah. But again, because I've seen it so much, I'm like, I wish that I was wrong. I wish that it was that easy to say, hey, if your dog is insecure, just pick him up and everything's going to go away. But the reality is, we take away their ability to be a dog. We take away their ability to be an animal. And that's way more inhumane, because they're the ones that are sitting home shaking, you know, where's mom and dad? You know, when you're just, mm-hmm. you know, at the office doing whatever. And then you come home, you're like, hey, and they're like, I almost died. And they shouldn't have to, you know, and they shouldn't have to feel like that. And unfortunately, right. like that's what we made them feel like, because we put that emotion on them, and that's like what we do, and that's why small dogs unfortunately get like a bad rep, because that's how we treat them, because we can't treat we can't treat a mastiff like that because they're too big.
So
you understand that that's important. Mm-hmm. And again, it's going to take time, because you're unpacking, you're not going to, the amount of time she has left on Earth is not going to be longer than what she's already lived, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And so you're never going to be able to like unpack it completely, I don't think. Mm-hmm. Excuse me, I'd like you to, but you know, it's just, my point is don't be hard on yourself. It's going to take time. It may be frustrating. It's like a puppy. Like they come to you and they're like, they've never lived with people and they've never been trained. And they're like, same thing with Burley. Like he's like, oh, I'm just like this big goober, and I'm like, hey, we can't do this and we can't do that and we can't do this, and you feel like it's never going to end, and then you start seeing results and you're like, things are working, and it's like this thing. So anyway, it's the same thing with an older dog who's never been trained, is they've lived this certain life their whole life, and now you're like, hey, this is how we're going to live, and they're like, what? And you're pushing against the grain. So take your time, don't get too frustrated, take deep breaths, and things will get better. And then the collar and choking and the leash and all that stuff. So, there's a couple things. Okay. So, dogs who, and I am so close to doing like a little mini documentary on this, because I find, truthfully, genuinely, I find it unbelievably fascinating to see, because I travel a lot, and you know, we do farmers markets, and you know, when I travel, I really like to do everything right. I don't just sit in my hotel room or my Airbnb and be like, oh, I can't wait to train tomorrow. Like I'm in the community, I'm, you know, going to local places. I love that. And one thing I notice is dogs, like the dog communities and the dog culture is interesting. So one of the things that I see, going to your point of what you should train with, is no matter where I go, there's certain behaved dogs and certain equipment, and it's consistent. And again, if I just talk about it, it would be like, oh yeah, sure, that's because you do this. And you, but it's consistent. And that's why I felt like doing this little documentary, to be like, every single dog that I typically, generally, and generally would be, so let's define that. That would be 8 times out of 10 I saw this dog, this is how it would act. There's the 2 percenters that's like the unicorns and on both ends of the spectrum, right? But the majority of dogs that are, you can hear them go, and they're pulling and their eyes are like, you know, bulging out of their head. And all they want to do is get away from what they're in. Like they're not content. They don't look at their owners. They're not engaged. They're not looking around them. They're just like some sort of like Walking Dead zombie trying to burst through this bubble. And again, to me, from a behavioral standpoint, I'm like, I'm sad because I know that the relationship is, I used to say unhealthy, and I don't know if I want to say that in the future because I don't mean it to sound like it's the dog owner's fault because they don't know. Mm-hmm. Like it's an ignorance thing. Like they have no idea that that's so. But it's unbalanced, right? We see that like from a behavioral standpoint, from a training standpoint, what do I want to see that would really point towards healthy and mm-hmm. balanced? I would like to see a dog interested in their surroundings, but also mindful that the person that they love and care about the most has the other end of the leash. Mm-hmm. And contrary to that, when I see dogs pulling on the end of the leash, dragging to see other people and to see it, they're not content with themselves. They are so interested in everything else. And the person that should care the most doesn't. And I say this to my clients all the time. I said, if you dropped your leash right now and turned away and walked home, your dog wouldn't even know. And people like, it's sad to say, but it's the truth. Mm-hmm. Like if you just, they just wouldn't care because you don't, and this is not like, I'm not trying to, you know, scare you or anything, but it's like, you don't matter.
Right.
That doesn't mean that they don't love you. That doesn't mean that they don't care about you. It just means that you do not matter to them. And to me, that's like, man, why have a human's best friend, like a thing that was invented to be our right-hand person in our life and be this beautiful utility tool / emotional support thing / best buddy and not care? Like if you drop the leash to your dog pulling you, and it, and I've seen dogs pull on harnesses. I've seen dogs pull on prong collars. I've seen dogs pull on flat collar. It's not necessarily a tool thing in whole as much as it is people who use these certain tools that go through training as it gets kind of gets granular. So going to your point of what tools you should use, I find in my experience with people coming in to work with me, to pay me money to say, hey, I need help with my dog. Generally, those people who don't have a good connection and don't have good control over their dogs don't have good engagement. They don't have good leash skills, okay? And that's something that is really disheartening for me. Even, again, I just went to the farmer's market and it's just the kind of fresh in my mind where so many dogs were so disconnected from their owners. And it's sad because it's almost like the owners are like, it's kind of like the movie Pets where there's like two different lives being lived here where it's like the owners are like, I'm going to bring Fido to the farmer's market because they're going to love it. And then Fido gets there and they try to run away from the owner. But the owner has no idea that that's happening. And because I work with dogs professionally and I'm an expert behavior, I see this like day and night. I'm like, holy crap, this is not good. And if I told that person this is what was going on, I would ruin their day and I don't want to do that. But as a whole, that's what I'm seeing. So when you're training with your dog, the reason why I'm accumulating this information and making up this story, not making up, but telling you this story, is I want you to understand that the equipment does matter, definitely. But before the equipment is going to come like the purpose of what you're supposed to be doing on the leash. And I want you to matter to your dog, and your dog wants to matter to you. And so when you're thinking about using different types of equipment, you have to first look at your purpose of this, right? Well, my purpose and your purpose with your dog should develop an engaging, tangible relationship between one another with clear communication. Not just, this is the tool I put on my dog so they don't run away, because that's what most people do. I mean, if you go downtown in New York where you live, and you start looking, and like it's kind of like this thing that you can't unsee. You start looking at all these dogs that are just, they're just coexisting, like we do with people in New York. We just walk by, and it's like whatever. Like dogs do that with their own owners, where they're like just here and they're here, and so there's leash introduction, which is going to be teaching the dog how to move with the leash, teaching the dog how to respond to leash pressure, which means when there's pressure on the leash, the dog should have some sort of information that's information to them. So when they're pulling and getting dragged and all that stuff, like that should be feedback. Like they should know that that's not something you want to do, right? So with any dog, and in your case, a smaller dog, you want to be able to give the dog information with the least amount of force possible, which means we don't need two big strong arms and two full adult arms to train a dog. That you're doing it wrong if that's the case. Right? You shouldn't have to do that. So you want clear enough information to a dog to tell them directly what they can and can't do. Like you would with a kid. You go out with a four-year-old, you're walking downtown Manhattan, and you're, hey, buddy, hold my hand. Look both ways. Pay attention. Whatever, right? You got to have communication unless it's going to be a nightmare, right? Mm-hmm. If you're not on the same page, it's dangerous. Like, that's the bottom line. It's not like, oh, it's a headache. No, it's dangerous. Like, this is a dangerous place for a kid to be if you don't have good communication or you don't have control. It's not a safe place. Cars and trucks and, you know, whatever. And so, same thing with dogs. Like, you want clear lines of communication. And with smaller dogs, there's fewer things that you can do because there's, especially with a tiny dog, right? Like a tiny dog, like your dog, but harnesses are okay. They just they're safe, but they don't provide information. They don't provide feedback to one another. It's not really a loop system. Mm-hmm. It's a communicational loop system. It's really just a hanging on situation. The only reason why people use harnesses is because it's easier for them to hang on. That's it. The only thing that somebody might bring up is like, well, my dog doesn't choke on this. But again, it's like if your dog's choking, there's something going on there. Mm-hmm. Like that means your dog is pulling you, which means you don't have a good heel, which means you don't have good engagement, which means you don't have good understanding of what the leash is supposed to be anyway. So when you're providing information to a dog, the harness is developed and created and invented for dogs to pull safer, and it doesn't provide a ton of information to them, right? When you're using something like a martingale, it's a collar that what we call it has action, right? So action would be what a martingale does. It can come in and out and give some information where a harness can't. It's a stagnant piece of information. That's why when you see weight pulling dogs, which is a really cool event that dogs will do, they'll actually like pull weight, which is cool. They use harnesses for that because that's the safest way for dogs to pull. So I could get my trained dog I could put six harnesses on her and she's going to act perfectly because she's a trained dog. So I'm not trying to say harnesses are bad or you shouldn't use them. I'm just saying when you don't have a clear communication and relationship with your dog, the harness is only going to numb everything. It's just going to make it comfortable for you to get dragged. That's it. So, and that's why you did it, right? You were on the martingale. She was choking. Boop, harness. Now she's not. And there's nothing wrong with that. And I'm not saying anything bad about that. I think that that's the smarter, safer thing to do, to be honest. But I'm just letting you know the information kind of surrounding these things. Yeah. So the martingale is a collar that would have action. The slip collar is a collar that has action. The slip leash is a collar that has action, which means it has information that's going to be going to the dog that is dependent on their movement. So when a dog pulls on a harness, it's here, it connects at their chest, and they pull through it. That's why they do it. That's why you see huskies out mushing. What do they use? Harnesses, etc. So when you have information collars or collars that have feedback or have action, and, you know, maybe I should start calling them feedback collars because that's what it does. It gives feedback to the dog. So martingales have a certain limiter on it, like a restriction plate, if you will. So you can pull up on a martingale and it's not going to go anywhere after the certain restriction. And for a trained dog, it's really easy to give them information with that. But when you have an untrained dog, it's a little harder. So what I would suggest for you in the very beginning is I would get a slip leash. You can get my, I think we have them in stock, but a slip leash is going to be fit properly right under your dog's chin. Mm-hmm. So it's important because, again, like that's the kind of like the thing about dog training is there's a lot of like armchair experts that don't actually work with dogs that throw their opinions around. And so unfortunately, slip collars, slip leashes, or any tool can be ineffective. But slip leashes are all not made the same, like every other dog training tool. They're all not made the same. So what we have created, the No Bad Dog Slip Leash, is it has a spring-loaded tab. I don't have one right here, but essentially, I can grab one if you want me to show you, but essentially, when you put a slip leash on a dog, there's going to be a tab that's, so like you put your slip leash on a dog like this, and then there's a tab that you like cinch towards your dog's neck to hold it into place so it sizes the dog. That's why slip leashes are universally used more than anything else for professionals, because you can throw it on a dog and it'll fit a dog no matter what their size is. Yorkie, Mastiff, you put it on a dog and you go right up to their neck, right behind their ears, done. Now, if
I think
you,
that was the one. Was that the one that you put on Burly when he was biting? You put the red thing on him and then you had the orange thing. Was it the orange thing?
The orange thing, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So that's a slip leash. Now, we've developed our slip leashes with a spring-loaded tab, which means that thing that you slide down to position into place for the sizing won't move, and it holds to place. Most often, you go to PetSmart, Petco, or any other place, you're going to get a leather tab or a nylon tab, which eventually will work its way down, and the slip collar or leash will fall down onto their neck, making it basically a harness again. So again, if somebody says get a slip, it's like get an e-collar. It's like, they're not all the same. So you don't want to waste your time or mess anything up. And so when you use a slip leash, it's going to be making sure that you get the right one. And I'll tell you right now, we are in the process of ordering new ones. And if they're not in stock, they will be in stock. But you, regardless, you can go out and get one. It's okay to use. It's just know that it might slide down a little bit. You want to keep it into place. I've never found a spring-loaded tab slip leash in stores, ever. You've had the custom. That's why we made our own. It's very expensive. We're working on new sourcing, whatever. So if you're going to do that, that's how I would do it. You can also make your own slip collar, which I have a video on YouTube. But regardless, I would be doing slip leash. And then what you're going to be doing is introducing, so this is going back to what I was saying, introducing leash pressure inside. Ultimately, your dog should know heel before you expect them to walk nicely outside, period. Tom, my dog's pulling me. Do they know heel? Nope. Okay. my dog won't come back. Do they know come? Do they know recall? Nope. Okay. Well, it's not just going to happen, right? Your dog has four legs. We have two. Well, in your case, your dog has a little gait, so maybe it's possible that they naturally will walk at your pace, but regardless. So you want...
No, she was pulling me last night.
Okay. So there you go. Yeah. So when you're teaching and introducing the slip stuff, right? The collars that have information, right? They have some sort of feedback. You want to teach the fundamentals inside, non-distracted environment, okay? It's simple. It's going to be beginner, outside, hard. Okay? So it's like somebody who's never solved a math equation in their life and you put them into sixth grade algebra and they're like, I'm failing. Yes, of course you are. You have no idea what you're doing. So when you're introducing the leash, healing is another topic I'll briefly talk about, but leash pressure in general should be done inside in a non-distracted environment. And basically, you can start off by cueing heel, and heel is just the dog walking at your heels. That's what it is. So you say heel and you walk forward and you stop. Now, if the dog walk passes your heels or your feet, you correct the dog with a quick pop. Nope. and you're just going, wrong. And it surprises them. It's uncomfortable for them. It will stop what they're doing, etc. I mean, the list kind of goes on and on. But the goal is to say, what are you doing? Like, and this is the problem that dog owners don't have that I see all over the world, is they're just hanging on. They're not walking their dog. They're not training their dog. They're hanging on to their dog, which is to me, it's just tragic. I'm like, oh, everyone loves their dog. They spend so much money on their dog. They spend so much time with their dog, but their dog just doesn't care about them. I'm like, this sucks. Anyway, so it's going to be, as soon as your dog passes your feet, you're just going to use your leash and just a little bit of pressure. You're trying to basically correct the dog, like a pop, like a quick pop. I have an Instagram video on it when I was at a shelter working in Arizona, and it just goes over like the correction. You're not trying to force the dog. You're not trying to cause the dog pain. You're not trying to throw the dog into the next dimension. All you're trying to do is go, wrong. Nope.
Now, how important is sight in this training? I mean, if they see that they're going in front of you, I'm not trying to give her, you know, extra, you know, a handicap here, but I'm just curious. Yeah.
It's definitely a valid thing with her, because there is something that she can't really see. So what you would do is you would start working on, so the heel is, in her case, again, like, dogs are unbelievably smart. So we can say a heel for a dog with all their senses, smells, ears, eyes, etc., would be, the heel is going to be, you are in my proximity at my feet, right? For your dog, heel is going to be, we're walking at this pace. And if you cross that pace, that's it. And then you would use your feet to kind of make noises to say, hey, we're slowing down and things like that. But essentially, you would set the bar for pacing. And then the important thing is giving your dog a break. So then when you say break, then the dog can be in front of you. The dog can go pee. The dog can go poop. The dog can sniff. The dog can be a dog. It's like recess for dogs. You can do what you want. When I say, you can break. So every single person on this planet lives through that system. Every single person, right? Like, I have calls 4, 5, 6, and 7. They're all on my calendar. I show up. I talk to people and I move on to the next one. I keep doing it all. Like, that's my schedule. When I'm done, I can eat. I can watch the Rangers game. I can do what I want when I'm done, right? So when you say, same thing with, like, you know, the education system or work or whatever you want to say, right? It's like when you tell your dog, hey, buddy, heel, they have to be in this position. And in your case, it's not going to be as distinctive as nonverbal cues, which would mean when you turn, your dog should turn with you, because they might not feel that. But in your case, heel is going to be a pace system. A hearing system. The interesting thing is, like, dogs are so intuitive that, like, she knows where your body is because she can hear you. Mm-hmm. She can hear you. So, like, she knows when you stop. She knows when you go fast. But in your case, I would just be working on pace.
Okay.
And it's a kind of a long road. But that's the theory and that's the application of it. And you just do little tiny steps. So you would do heel, 1, 2. I have a video on my Instagram that I was training my Dutch Shepherd in Burley in my driveway. One of them was on, like, a yellow top, and then the other one was on, like, a cardboard box. And I was heeling Burley, like, 3 steps at a time. I'd go heel, 1, 2, 3, and I'd lean down to him and I'd pay him, good heel, 1, 2, 3, and I would just keep paying him so he couldn't make a mistake. I'd say heel, 1, 2, 3, pay. Heel, 1, 2, 3, pay. Heel, 1, 2, 3, pay. So he could never make a mistake. And he was getting paid using positive reinforcement when he was making a good decision. Now, the moment, if and when he decided to say, ooh, ladybug, nope. You don't, again, same thing with kids. Hold my hand. Oh, Mickey Mouse. Nope. Back here. That's it. It's just easier with humans because they understand English. Like, we can reprimand them through words. Dogs are animals. You can't. Mm-hmm. Period. They're very physical. You have to be physical with them because that's their language, right? They don't, like, talking to them is not their language. When I actually work with the dog, which I'll do once a seminar, I'll actually work with the dog. I don't say anything. I'm silent. But I give the dog more information than the dog owner ever has in their life, and they perform better and they're more obedient. But that's not the world. You know, not everybody's a professional. It's not the world we live in. So inside, heel, 1, 2, 3 break, etc. And you're just going to start implementing good heel, good payment systems, get your treats out. And you want to just keep her with you. You want her engaged with you, right? Like when you're out with a dog, you want them looking at you. You want them, what are we doing next? Like everyone comments that with Lakota when she's out. She's so lasered in on me because I matter to her. Nothing else matters. Nobody else is going to play with her. I matter. Every dog is different. But that's what I would be working on with you is I would get a slip to start working on fundamental inside work. Very easy, very basic. When you go outside, the first like, and even thresholds for her is going to be really important. So you could do weights at the door. And again, she's not going to know the door opened or closed necessarily. She probably will because she's smart. She can hear it. She can feel it. But it would be, wait, you know, down to your door. Wait, open the door. Okay, break. You'd break her out. You'd let her sniff. Give her 10 to 30 seconds. Let her do her thing. Okay, heel. And she's got to be in that proximity. And the moment you can do that is the moment. It's just such a beautiful thing. It's you're not creating a robot. You're not suppressing her. Is the dog is actively, it's like the same thing as like, excuse me, you're all at the dinner with friends and family, people you really care about, and everybody's sitting on their phones. Versus you're out to dinner with friends and family and everybody's talking to each other, laughing, looking at each other in the eyes and having a good time. When I see dog and dog owners out with their dogs and the dog is just dragging them, that's everybody on their phone. I'm like, you guys are not connected. You might as well just let go or have somebody else walk your dog. And I know that that sounds like sad or whatever, and it is, but like that is the reality of what's happening. You drop the leash and walk away and your dog's not going to care. They're just, oh, there's another dog. And look at, it's just, they're gone. Oh, mom and dad, I don't care. Till they get hungry and then they go, you know, find a dumpster, you know? So that's what I would want you to have is better engagement, better understanding of leash pressure. And you would work on your heel and your break and your heel and your break. Because the next question I usually get is, how long do you heel for? How long do you heel for? And it's just like riding a bike. In the beginning, it's going to be slow and really simple. And then as you get better and better, the duration and the distance of how long your dog goes depends on how much work you put in. It's like working out. It's like, you know, how much can you lift today? I don't know. How much? Where's your threshold? Like, where did you start at last? You know, if you're staying in the same place, you're never going to get better. And that's what I would start with. And I think that'd be really helpful. One thing I'll say, direction with your dog on collars that have action. When the dog pulls, you don't want to pull up. That's going to encourage the dog likely to sit. You want to pull back. So you're correcting back, not up. Okay. Especially with a smaller dog, because you're likely just going to lift her up, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's just a little like, doom, 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 doom. Like if you've ever been fishing, it's like a fish hitting a line. It's not like hitting like a whale on the line, like, whoom, it goes straight down. It's just a couple like, da, 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 tabs and jabs, just really quick, pop, 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 just to say, nope. Okay. And all you're just trying to disrupt what she's doing. Hey, it's like hitting the rumble strips. Nope. 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 You're trying to disrupt what they're doing. Okay. And when she's in heel, it's going to be audible, good heel payment, good heel payment. Just letting her know, this is it. Keep doing this. And the moment she crosses your legs,
got it.
Make it really clear, really binary for her. That's not it.
No, that's helpful. Thank you so much. I know we're at time, but it was truly honor to meet you, and thank you for the hour. This was all really helpful, and we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, you're welcome. My pleasure. You can always, you know, do these again in the future. I oftentimes talk to dog owners, and they feel like it's like so much information, but really, like an hour consult is a really good like deep dive, like crunch into like, okay, this is kind of like a quick little like, this is where you can start. So in the future, you can always do these again, you know, in a couple months where you're like, okay, I'm started and I'm still got questions. Or once you have a good base, like I feel like you have a good base now, you can always like, I have so much YouTube content for free that you can go and catch up on. And because this is kind of like a crash course. But yeah, I wish you the best of luck. It was nice chatting with you, and good luck with her.
All right. Thank you so much and safe travels.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye.
All right.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.